Hello, and thanks for listening to the podcast edition of Ordinary Philosophy. Here, you can listen to interviews and audio renditions of pieces published in Ordinary Philosophy about philosophy as one of the most important tools to help us live good and meaningful lives, and about the history of ideas that change the world. For more about Ordinary Philosophy, and to discover the sources and inspiration for each piece, please visit www.ordinaryphilosophy.com. Ordinary Philosophy's website and podcast are independent and ad-free, and depend on support from patrons and listeners like you. To find out more about how you can contribute to Ordinary Philosophy, please visit the Subscribe, Submit, and Support page and consider donating today. And if you enjoy what you read and hear at Ordinary Philosophy, please share with those you believe will enjoy it too. I'm Amy Cools, creator and editor of Ordinary Philosophy. Episode 34, Traveling Philosophy Series, Frederick Douglass Edition, Prologue, Oakland, California. Frederick Douglass's Traveling Philosophy Series will begin in earnest when I arrive on the East Coast. But behind every Traveling Philosophy Series is research, and I have some excellent resources here where I live in Oakland, California. It's still a little up in the air as to when I'll actually be able to make it to the East Coast for a long enough period to cover the ground I'd like to, since I intend the series to be the most comprehensive I've done yet. So I've decided to do something a little different this time. To start the account of my journey with my discoveries and thoughts on the acts and ideas of Douglass I encounter while researching his life. For the last several weeks, I've been gathering materials at my local library branch, the main branch near beautiful Lake Merritt on 14th Street. But for many happy afternoons this early December, I'm on the other side of downtown, still on 14th Street, in my new favorite study space, the lovely African American Museum and Library in Oakland. The AAMLO, or AMLO as I'll call it for short, is a local Beaux-Arts gem, the original main library building from 1902 until it moved to its current, much larger location in the early 1950s. You can find an image of the museum's green plaque on the website page for this piece for a brief history of the library and museum. The AMLO is a new discovery for me this December, and as I enter, I'm greeted, to my delight, with a handsome, if rather stern, sculpture of the hero of my series. It's this effigy of Douglass, in fact, which inspires me to just jump right in and start his Traveling Philosophy series here in Oakland. So I'll begin, as I mentioned, with stories and reflections on his life and work. My trip to the East Coast, tentatively planned for mid-spring, and the stories of that journey will be followed by a second series of essays inspired by my discoveries in the course of my travels. I hope you enjoy this new format, and as always, welcome any feedback you wish to offer. The AMLO is a reference library only, so all materials I use must stay here. That's perfectly fine with me. It's such a lovely place to work, and lucky for me, it's close by to where I live and work. Since I'll be returning here a lot, I pick a quiet, cozy corner and get to work. One afternoon, after reading and making notes for quite some time, I feel the need to stretch my legs and rest my tired eyes. I go upstairs to the museum, a long gallery which runs the length of the building and which used to be the main reading room. Crowding the main stairway which leads to this upper gallery, there's a huge collage of great figures in African American history. It just so happens that the image of Douglass is under the name of Spinoza, among the list of names of great thinkers of the past which embellishes the frieze. Cool. Baruch Spinoza is next on my list of great thinkers to follow, but that's a story for another time. I bet they'd have the most fascinating conversations, though, if they could speak the same language. Though they were very different in their histories, their particular beliefs, and their personalities, yet they were both lovers of reason, and they both lived authentically, true to their beliefs, models of intellectual integrity as they refused to obey the unjust rules of the societies they lived in. The museum tells the story of the African American people who did so much to make Oakland the vibrant and diverse city it is today, and how America's legacy of laws and practices both helped and harmed the African American community here and throughout California. The African American community in Oakland grew by leaps and bounds throughout the 1900s, much of it made up of refugees from the Old South, and through hard work, came to make up a significant proportion of its thriving middle class. Oakland's economy centered around its busy port and manufacturers, and as the work dried up after the stock market crash of 1929, It was no surprise that the economic woes hit African Americans the hardest. When jobs became more scarce, it was not the favored demographics that suffered from it most, as you may expect. Oakland's working black population lost well over a third of their jobs. Douglas himself experienced job discrimination in his time working on the Maryland docks as a calker. Hired out as a wage earner in the Baltimore shipyards for his master before he escaped to freedom. In his narrative, Douglas relates the story of a severe beating he received at the hands of white shipbuilders who resented the competition of low-paid black labor, both slave and free. Douglas was driven from his job by violence. In 20th century Oakland, it was a combination of job discrimination, rules and laws which prevented black people from joining or forming unions, and differential treatment by law enforcement. Not everything had changed since Douglas's day. So as black Oaklanders suffered many of the worst effects of the economic downturn, the ills of poverty hit black communities the hardest, and harsh, unjust police practices and drug policies exacerbated the problems that they may have been meant to alleviate. Many, however, passionately believed that there was no honest intent to help, just to oppress and destroy the black community. Whatever the case may be, the desperation of so many of Oakland's black people make it no wonder that the Black Panther Party was founded here in Oakland in the 1960s. Then as now, a strong cultural tradition of racial justice activism and civic unrest flourished, sometimes, as again to be expected in an environment where so many felt disenfranchised and disrespected, to excess. If he were alive to witness it, Douglas may have disapproved of many of the Black Panther Party's militant tactics, but like the BPP and Malcolm X after him, he came to believe that some kind of armed resistance may be necessary to achieve liberty and full equality for black people, and that if violent resistance was necessary to change the laws, it was just, given the depth of oppression and injustice black people suffered. He was, for example, an admirer of John Brown, a passionate abolitionist who unsuccessfully tried to start an armed slave rebellion and was hanged for treason as a result. What Douglas thought about whether or not it's right to use violence in the cause of furthering human rights, and if so, how much, against whom, and when, is a big topic, one for another essay in this series. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening.